We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits.
But this is Indiana. And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm joined today once again by Michael J. Fauci. Fauci, how's it going?
Pretty good. Just mourning the loss to the Chicago Bulls, trying to move on with my life. But, you know, at the same point, hey, life goes on, and that's exactly what we have to do. We have to keep moving forward.
It's a new day, Fauci. It's been 24 hours since that game happened as you're listening to this podcast. So you got to let it go. I know it's tough, but it's Friday. The weekend's almost here. Let's just enjoy it. But what better way to kick off the weekend than doing a fun segment here on Setting the Pace? And no, it is not a draft segment. Congratulations. You guys are free from a draft podcast today. But maybe there'll be one in the second segment as we preview the Pacers-Nets game. Cannot confirm or deny that. But me and Fauci were talking. We thought, let's do a fun little segment here. Kind of a gimmicky segment. And go through about 12 players on the roster that are playing, you know, in the rotation or when they're healthy or when they're not healthy, whatever. But we've got 12 guys here we're going to look at, and we're going to give them one word to describe their current spot, I guess you could say, right now this season. I don't really know exactly how we're going to do it, but one word to describe each player. And I'm not sure which way Fauci went, but I know which way I went. So I'll let you pick where you want to start.
Let's start towards the bottom of the roster. So I'll point you in that direction. Who do you want to start with name-wise?
Well, we can go with Doug McDermott.
All right, I'm going to go with Ghost. All right, just the man is just he's not present. We've heard rumors of him. Maybe it's a little bit haunted, but we have not seen the Doug McDermott of the past.
Yeah, that's a good one. For me, I said washed.
Yeah, I mean,
he just looks washed. He does not look the same, and so I highly doubt he really gets back into the rotation. He's been out for like the last 6-7 games, and you really haven't even thought about it. So you could almost write unforgettable as well, but washed is the word I'm going to go with.
I think it's accurate. There's no way around it. Hey, it's hard to see McDermott earning minutes with this Pacers team, even when healthy. right now. I just feel that he's those minutes have gone elsewhere. Next on the list, Isaiah Jackson. What do you got for him?
I just wrote athletic. I know it's pretty lazy, but it's just he's not in the rotation consistently, but every time he is, he looks really athletic. So I just wrote athletic.
Doesn't make sense, too much sense for me, but I'm going with Painter. Just he's in the paint, you know. I just
Painter,
feel that,
okay.
You know, I just felt that this is someone that, hey, catch him in the paint, rebound and catching lobs, you know, doing the dunks. That's what he does. That's where he'll be.
All right, let's keep it moving here. Let's go with Jairus Walker.
I'm going bright, and that's his future. I feel that for Jairus Walker, you're already starting to see it. The Chicago game, I felt that he brought a lot to the table. I believe he was like a plus 14 in that game and played 24 minutes. I think you could just see that come next year, Jairus Walker, in my opinion, is definitely going to be someone contributing to the Pacers on a nightly basis. And when I say contributing, I mean making an impact.
Okay, I like Bright because I kind of did something similar to that, but I wrote growing because I feel like he is growing right in front of us. And we're starting to see an uptick in minutes for him, like 20-plus minutes against the Bulls. He had 7 minutes only against OKC, only 3 against Orlando. But with the Mathurin injury, that does kind of allow for him to have more of an opportunity, like Rick Carlisle said, and I feel like growing is a good word to put out there for him because we are seeing him truly grow before us.
I mean, seeing his minutes double each of the last 3 games, he might be playing all 48 next game against Brooklyn. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, it's just nice to see him playing meaningful minutes. That's something we didn't know would happen this year based on the way the first, you know, 50-plus games went of this season. But next, Ben Shepherd, what do you got?
Yeah, I just wrote defender. I don't know what you put for Ben Shepherd, but – What do you got for Ben Shepherd?
I wrote spark. I feel like at times he's had big plays that have created a spark for this team. I know maybe it's been a couple of games since a really big Ben Shepherd play, but I feel like someone on this team could make a three, and it could be, hey, nice. I feel like when Ben Shepherd makes a three, there's something a little bit behind it that's like, wow, that was big. All right, or he'll get a steal, and it'll lead to a basket. So I went with spark. I didn't want to just go like mustache or anything like that. You know, I wanted to have something that could kind of define his game a little bit more than an appearance.
Yeah, I think spark's a good one. I was trying to figure out what was the right word to put for him because I didn't want his to kind of overlap with McConnell's, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
that was tough for me, but I think spark's a good one. Defender and spark, I feel like those are two words kind of describe his overall play. So let's move on now to Obi Toppin. What you got?
I'm going soaring. I feel like, you know, this is a guy that, you know, could soar from the sky. He could flush anything down, you know, at times. But I felt that was, when you think of Obi, you do think of a kind of like a fast break alley-oop related type of, you know, adjective.
Yeah. For me, my first word that came to mind was inconsistent.
I thought about that too. I really did. But
I crossed
didn't
want it off.
Sum his whole game up into just like inconsistent. But I hear you on that.
Yeah, I crossed it off because I don't want people to be like, oh, you hate Obi Toppin so much. I don't want to hear that crap. So I change it to runner because he is a runner. And if he's running and he's soaring, that's what he does. But I do like the way that he plays with his pace. He's a very good runner in terms of getting out and running in transition, running back on defense, running to the glass, running away from the glass. Like he just runs all the time. So he's like a gazelle out there sometimes with how much he runs and how quick he can get down the court.
No, it's true. I mean, an inconsistent is sadly also true. I mean, look at this against Dallas, you know, in the win, 14 points on 5-6 shooting. Great. Against Minnesota, 2 points. Next game, Orlando, 17 points, 8 boards. It's like against OKC, still give you 10, but it's like against Chicago, just 4. I just feel, and the shooting was rough, 2 of 7. So he has been inconsistent, but there also are some great qualities like being a runner, being, you know, soaring through the sky. He makes some plays with some freakish athletic ability that a lot of players just do not possess. Next on my list, I had Jalen Smith. What do you got for Jalen?
All right. This is going to sound crazy, but I wrote nice. He's a nice player. He is a nice guy, but he's a nice player. Like everything that like he does, he's a nice defender. He's a nice 3-point shooter. He's a nice rebounder. He's not great at anything, but I just feel like he's nice. And so I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to go with.
Nice. Every word that a guy does not want to be described
Nice
on a
guy.
date. It's like, how'd the date go? He was nice. So he's not getting a second date? No, probably not. So I feel like that right over there is like, hey, you know, oh, look, Jalen is nice. He's a nice guy. He's a nice player. I went with improved. I feel that he, you know, when you look at what you saw last year, he improved his body. He improved his game. He improved, you know, his 3-point shot. I feel like he's been a good rebounder, and he's always done a lot in like 20 minutes or less for the Pacers. So I do think that if given a bigger opportunity, he could show even more, but that's why I'm going with improved.
Improves a good one. Yeah, I like that word. Nice was kind of a cop out. I was
Yeah,
kind
I
of,
think so.
I was wanting to use a different word, but I used that for somebody else. I was like, I can't use the same word twice. So I
You
was like, I'll
can't.
go with something similar. Nice was just what I went with. So next we got TJ McConnell to round out the bench. What do you got for
Now
TJ?
you could, I think McConnell, you could make an argument. He could be described by the most different words, but I just went with reliable. I feel like the Pacers, every time you need TJ McConnell, he produces. You don't want to have to count on TJ McConnell, like to, hey, McConnell's got to give us 15. But when you're like, yo, I don't know, Haliburton really doesn't have it tonight. Like TJ McConnell's that guy that really picks it up. And I just feel like we talked about last episode, McConnell averaging a career high on the season. It's just something you didn't expect, but when called upon, that man is always ready.
Yeah, that's a great word for him because, like you said, there are a thousand different words I think you could use to describe him. And this is one where, you use spark for Shep. I kind of use something similar to that. I wrote Energizer
That's
because
fair.
it's pretty simple with TJ McConnell. He energizes this team on a night-to-night basis, especially when they get off to their slow starts, which has been the norm for the majority of this, starting fives, offense. And even before that, I feel like the Pacers were just kind of like, man, getting started off, and they kind of get going in this late second, middle of the second, sometimes even in the third quarter. That's when they start playing really great basketball. So I just feel like he is the energizer. And if you have a reliable energizer on your bench, kind of leading that unit, that sounds pretty good to me. So let's get to the starting five here, Fauci. Who do you want to go with first?
Go Andrew Nembhard.
Okay, what's your word?
I'm going with vital. I think that Andrew Nembhard is vital to the Pacers' success. I think that we've talked about, you know, Nembhard moving into the starting lineup. They've just been a better team. They've improved defensively. I feel that if Andrew Nembhard was to, you know, miss some time right now, I do think that the Pacers would feel that immediately. It might not be on the scoring side of things. It would definitely be on the defensive side of things. And I think that a healthy Andrew Nembhard is vital to the Pacers' success.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback off the vital word, I use disruptor.
Okay, I like it.
I feel like he disrupts a lot of things on the defensive side of things, fighting through screens, picking up the other guys, boxing out, making contact a lot. And you could even say this is a negative thing, but sometimes he does disrupt the offense with his bad shot selection or his costly turnovers. But I'll let people interpret it how they want to interpret it, but I just felt like disruptor was the right word because I feel like he disrupts a lot of what's going on for the other team. And, he did have some bad shots in that game against Chicago late down the stretch. And I know there was people frustrated with the 3-point shots, especially I think he had three of them from 30 feet. One of
That's way too
them
much.
was really bad. Two of them I kind of understood because it was like with the shot clock winding down, there was like less than 4 seconds left. So like him taking a semi-open shot versus kicking it back out and having someone else kind of force something else, like, okay, you're probably looking at the same level of shot that you want to see taken in terms of like high percentage wise. So yeah, but I feel like he is here for his defense, and that's why he is a vital defender who is a disruptor.
I think that's very fair. I think it's a good description. Aaron Nesmith, what do you got for Nesmith?
Yeah, I think Aaron Nesmith actually gave himself this word after the game against OKC in the locker room, and that is fearless. So I put
Good to
fearless
know.
down for Aaron Nesmith.
Okay, I think that's good. I'm going with glue. I feel that Aaron Nesmith is very he is at times the glue that holds this Pacers team together. I think defensively, absolutely. But I think that they're also a much better team when Nesmith is giving you 15 points, you know, or more. So I'm going with glue, aka Elmers, you know, but we'll stick with glue.
Should have put Elmer's down. That would have been a better word.
I thought about it. I thought at first someone might be like, what? But you know, once I tied it together with talking about glue first, it definitely made sense. And I think there's plenty of different words you could describe, but please don't use crash. The man does not like it.
Exactly. All right, we got three players left. Let's go with Miles Turner. What was your word for Turner?
I'm going underappreciated. I think at times I've been guilty of it. I think the whole fan base has at times, is because there's the highs and lows of Turner, but like, this man has stuck with us since 2015, and that's why I also had loyal as the second word. But I'm going with underappreciated, because a performance like what he did against Chicago, when we really needed countless big shots, Turner's had big games, especially against Dallas this year. I feel like he's killed Dallas. There's been so many first halves that he's really, you know, just kind of exploded onto the scene and kept the Pacers in games that I think sometimes we take for granted. Like I said, I've been guilty of it. I think the whole fan base has at times. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, that's a good word. I went with solid, and that's why I could not go solid with Jalen Smith. I had to go nice, because I feel like Turner's just been solid all year long.
Yeah.
Like, he's a solid player. Doesn't do anything great besides maybe protecting the rim, but even that's not been great this year. But I feel like he's just solid in a lot of areas. You know, solid three-point shooter, solid around the basket, solid rim protector. You know, he's solid with really just being there defensively and calling out the right things. Obviously, his drop coverage can be good or bad depending on the matchup. But, you know, he's a solid screener. He's pretty good in the pick and roll. Pick and pop has been really solid at that. So I know it's kind of a boring word, but I just felt like solid was the right word to kind of describe his overall game right now.
Better than above average, you know. So I think, you know, hey, solid. Yeah, he's definitely been solid. I think that, you know, hasn't duplicated his career year from last year, but there really wasn't much of a drop off. So I think that a strong bounce back year, or strong consistent year from Turner. You know, from taking that big step forward last year. Mm-hmm. But next, that moves us over to Pascal Siakam. What do you got for Siakam?
Yeah, so for Pascal Siakam, and maybe it's just recency bias against Chicago, but I wrote underutilized.
Okay.
Like, well, Siakam, I mean, is just...
Definitely at times, yeah.
I just feel like he's underutilized for what he can bring to this team. And that's kudos to him for trying to fit in and not trying to force too much. But I think you talked about it, like, after the first game or, like, the second game, like, oh, he's got to be more assertive. We need Pascal to be more assertive. And I understood early on why he wasn't as assertive, because he's trying to get a feel for how this team plays and how they are. But like, here we are, 25 whatever games it is since we've traded for him, and there's times where he just is often forgotten about in the offense with what they're trying to do. And I feel like too often he is a little bit underutilized and how he should be used with this team.
This is a two-time All-NBA player. These guys don't grow on trees. When you trade three first-round picks for him, you better use him. And especially once the Pacers, you know, look to re-sign them, yeah, you better make sure he gets his touches. The word that I use to describe him, prescribed. I feel that he's everything the doctor ordered. He's everything that the Pacers, when they said they needed to go out there and get their second star, Pascal Siakam's checking those boxes. I really do feel that. Yeah, you know, the current All-NBA guys of this year, none of those guys are available. Pascal Siakam was hands down the best that Indiana could potentially acquire, and I do that move time after time, and I felt like he is everything that was prescribed to Indiana. So that's the word I'm going with.
I think that's a funny word, Fauci, not the one I was expecting. So
no one's expecting that one. I think you could have went with a ton of different directions. But that's what I was leaning. Next, that leads us into Tyrese Haliburton to close us out. What do you got?
I mean, I feel like this is a cop-out, but I wrote hamstring.
Hamstring? Yeah, I mean. Or hamstrung. Yeah, I mean, hey, look, you definitely don't want that to be the word that describes him. But I think that that's been a key situation in his season.
I think it's been really the kind of the downfall of Tyrese. And I hate to say it like that, because it's not a total downfall, because he's still putting up pretty solid numbers, but like,
yeah.
I don't know how many times I've said it on this podcast. We are not seeing elite Tyrese Haliburton. We're not seeing Tyrese Haliburton skip. There's been times we've seen him smile and things like that, but he is just clearly not the same player that he once was. And I think that you can give a lot of credit to defenses for putting more pressure on him, kind of controlling what he does, forcing him to play a different style. Like, he just to me looks like a guy that could have probably sat out another week or two before coming back, but he was trying to make all NBA. And there's a reason why he played 22 minutes, because you have to play 20 minutes to be counted eligible for games. So, you know, if the money wasn't involved in this, I don't think he, you know, worries about making all NBA, but because the money relies on, you know, is so dependent upon this year, he's trying to play through what is not a 100% hamstring. And I hope and I pray that this is not going to be a lingering issue that, you know, causes him to have some impact next year negatively in the regular season, because the hamstring never fully healed like it should have.
Yeah, I think there'll be plenty of time for rest. But yeah, when we talk about just some of these months, I mean, look at it in November. In the month of November, he averaged 28.6 points per game on 53% shooting, 47% from three, and then 12 assists per game. He was the talk of the town. In December, 21 points per game on 48% shooting, 14 assists per game, and 37% from three. Awesome. See, then take a dip. In the month of January, 18 points per game, actually 17.9 to be exact, 44%, 30% from three, and still 11.6 assists. And it was down to 16 points per game on 48% shooting, 38% from three, just under 9 assists. And then now in the month of March, Alex, 15.3 points per game on 42% shooting, 19.5% from three, and 9 assists. This is not the Tyrese Halliburton that was, you know, being labeled as the next potential face of the NBA about a month ago. I mean, that was a major, major accolade that was being tossed around. And yeah, there is just far too much money involved right now that I think that it's really, you know, brought him down. And I think that this is a really tough stretch. And for Halliburton, it's just tough because this man had everything was going his way in the beginning of the year. And the Pacers were obviously a better team for it. But the word that I went with, seeing bigger picture here, I went with chosen. I really do feel that he is the chosen one for the Pacers to be able to take them to heights that either they haven't been in a long time or hopefully heights they've never been, period. And I feel like we've already seen what he can do as a recruiter. You know, we've already seen what he can do in terms of getting his teammates involved. I do feel that he is the chosen one for the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel good about him moving forward, but I just feel like where we're at now is just a little bit different. I mean, there's a lot of different words you could have put for Tyrese, like slumping could have been one. Because
franchise,
he's just not...
could have been, yeah, a ton of them.
Yeah, I was struggling. At first I wrote pressure, then I wrote health, then I wrote hamstring. I mean, it's honestly like it's really sad to see where Tyrese is at right now compared to where he once was, because you know he's just not 100% there. And, you know, I'm not going to make excuses for him whatsoever. Like, hey, if you're out there on the court, you've got to play better. That's just the bottom line. You've got to play better, and you got to figure out what's a good shot, what's not a good shot. Because some of the shots that he was making earlier in the year, like, they probably weren't good shots, but he was making them. So you just, yeah, they're good
deep
shots because you're making
at
them.
Times. Some deep ones, like borderline logo-ish. Yeah. Right now, you don't want him taking one of those shots. You don't feel good about it.
Some of the threes that he's taken, I feel like the last couple of games, last couple of weeks, I've been questioning why he's taking those shots, because I'm thinking that's not a great shot in rhythm, and it's kind of like midway through the shot clock. Like, is that the best look this team could have gotten if they would just continue to run more of their actions? You know, it's hard to sit there and judge Tyrese Halliburton for what he's doing, but it's a weird dynamic, because you want to see him play, you want to see him get that money that he rightfully deserves, and you want to see him make all NBA, but you also want him to be healthy. You don't want to have to worry about, like, if he is the chosen one, you don't want him to be like Anakin and hear Obi-Wan saying, you were the chosen one, you know, and then all of a sudden we have the reoccurring Victor Oladipo situation. But, like, if he truly is the chosen one, he can't be hurt. And you said, well, he's got plenty of time to rest. Like, what if he plays for Team USA this year? Like,
and that's true.
It's a lot of wear and tear on his body throughout the offseason. So he's just going to have to really, like, figure out, like, how hurt he really is and make a tough decision for Team USA. I'm not saying he shouldn't go, but, like, He really needs to shut it down for like 2 months when the season's over before he ramps it back up for Team USA.
It's true because these are the demands of being a star player. And you could see this is why some of those star players eventually opt out of the Olympics and stuff, because they're just worn out. Like, I mean, look, yes, he's not LeBron, but then you could see like LeBron going through the NBA finals and then all of a sudden, you know, Team USA wants him in the offseason. He's exhausted. It's just like that wear and tear. We saw Tyrese being like having that pressure to put on to represent Indiana in the All-Star game. Not only be a starter, but also be going for MVP in that game when he was already hurt to begin with. He was on minute restriction, you know, just about a week just before that. So I just felt like he's just been playing catch up for far too long. He still does have 4 to 5 games that he could miss. There's only about 15 games left in the regular season. But the Pacers are, you could see where the seeding is. They're, you know, with any loss, they could slip into the play-in territory. It's tough, but at some point, they're going to have to find a game or two to give him rest. And I think that if the Pacers can find a week, maybe it's like five days to be able to give him just some solid rest, I think it could go a long way. That comes with you got to be able to win some games first. Yeah. And I think that that would be vital to Haliburton and the Pacers' success.
Well, I thought vital was Nimhard's word.
That's a good point. And did I use essential? Because if I'm using essential, that would be essential for the Pacers and Tyrese Haliburton and their success.
All right, just for fun, give me one word to describe this Pacers roster as a whole.
Promising, I would say. Promising is a word that you use when you're not quite all there. It's like you don't want to say potential, but it's like you see it at times. You see the, oh, wow, like, okay, they're young. They can stay together. A lot of these players have not reached their full potential yet. So I'm going to go with promising. What do you got?
Tough one. I think I'm going to go with incomplete.
Yeah. That's definitely fair.
Yeah. Just feel like there's too many holes on this roster to feel good about them doing much more of anything besides maybe winning one playoff series at this point. A lot of injuries piling up to guys that are important, like a Mathurin. Still trying to figure out, like, who is the best five-man rotation. Like, you have an idea of who it is now, but, like, is that five-man rotation good enough moving forward? I don't think it is. I think that some of the starters right now probably would be better off in a lesser role. So you've probably got three solidified starters right now. Yeah. Maybe a fourth if Mathurin can really evolve into that. And so you're still kind of missing that starting three, in my opinion. Even though I love Aaron Nesmith, I just kind of wonder if he's a long-term fit as a starting three. Like, I think he can play it, but I think he's more of like a hybrid six man. Nimhard, I think he's best as a starter for the team that's currently constructed. But I also think that they could find an upgrade at the two spot, one that can give you a little bit more scoring, a little bit more consistency from outside shooting, and hopefully replicate some of the things he does on defense. But yeah, I just feel like they are incomplete overall based on how they're built. But other than that, anybody else you want to throw out there that we haven't given one word to yet?
No. Carlisle? I mean, look, I think the easy one for like James Johnson is just like tough, you know, leader, vet, you know. What was that?
Security.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that those were good words to describe him. And then, you know, I think for Mathurin, I think it would be fair to say incomplete, because I do think that I know you use that for the team, but I feel like there are certain things and flashes that you've seen that's great, and there's other things that you're like, hey, you know what? You could make a big argument that Mathurin didn't take a step forward this year. In certain avenues, he did. Certain avenues, he didn't. And now it kind of feels like his season is incomplete, not being able to finish it. I would have loved to have seen, you know, the dog and Mathurin in the playoffs, and if maybe he could have like willed us to maybe a win that maybe we wouldn't have had. We're not going to get to see that. And I think that that kind of leaves his season as incomplete. And honestly, probably a lot of questions going into next year. So I think that would be my description for him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Mathurin's a tough one. Obviously, we didn't put him on here because of his injury, but yeah. You know, he is a guy that I think is, I think this is the word you use, but promising.
Yeah.
You know, so
hey, I used your word for the team for him. You used mine. Yeah. I think that works.
Yeah, because it's just like, you know, you still believe in him. Like,
Yeah, definitely.
there's belief in Mathurin to become great, and so that's good. Obviously, James Johnson, I feel like security is the right one for him, and then Kendall Brown, I would just say lucky, lucky to be here,
I think
happy
I
to be
said
here.
rewarded. Yeah.
Yeah,
You know.
Afro, you know, he's got a great Afro. I love that fro that he has, but yeah. Other than that, you know, it's an interesting thing. Now, if I were to give Rick Carlisle a word, that would be more tough. I would say stubborn.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty accurate. I think there's
Bullish,
the,
stubborn.
yeah, I don't know what I would give it at this moment. I think we're coming off of that
Eager.
Chicago Bulls, you know, loss. I think at times when things are great, you could say brilliant. You know, at times when they're not, you could say stubborn. You could
Respected.
say stuck. You could say stuck in ways or respected. Definitely, I think there's a lot of different ways you could go about it depending on where the Pacers are at in the season.
Yeah, it'd be like a wheel, and you would just spin it in whatever mood you're in. That's kind of what it would fall on. But thought this was a fun segment. So if there's a word that you guys have for these players, feel free to, you know, send us a message on social media and let us know the one word you have for each player. Maybe if there's a word you didn't agree with or whatever, let us know in the comments section below. But we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to come back after this with a quick Brooklyn Nets preview for that game on Saturday. We'll be right back after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, everybody, joining us now from Locked On Nets, it is Doug Norrie. Doug, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us. Setting the pace. How are you?
Oh, but coming down off the superstar era into a new level of basketball that is, yeah, at times exhilarating and at times not so much. But otherwise, yeah, just grinding through the Nets season.
I mean, would you call this the Mikal Bridges era or the Cam Thomas era?
You know, it's hard to even bring that up because, like, somehow Nets Nation has become so polarized that it's like they can't have both, right? It's like there's Cam people and there's Mikal people, and they don't seem to want to coexist with each other. I would say it's neither, because neither are probably like high-end superstars, and it's sort of trying to sort of vision what each can bring. But it's funny that you brought it up like that, because there's definitely a contingent among Nets world that would want you to think that it's one or it's binary, it's one or the other, or it's mutually exclusive. And I don't necessarily see it that way, but the state of the Nets world will have you thinking that maybe it is.
No, that's really interesting. I mean, Cam Thomas was the name that was rumored to Indiana back in the draft a couple of years ago, and they took Chris Duarte that draft, and now he's on the Sacramento Kings. And it's just crazy how much, you know, how things change so fast. But I look at this Nets team. We were talking before we got on air about how they don't have their draft pick. It belongs to the Houston Rockets, and this team really has nothing to play for in terms of winning or losing, because they might make the play-in. I guess they do have something to play for there, but in terms of, you know, trying to lose, because their record indicates that they're not heading in the right direction, they don't get their pick. So what's the point? So they're going to come out and they're going to play hard. And I think the Pacers have been a team that has struggled with the bottom of the NBA. It's been one of the worst things ever for Pacer fans, is just seeing this team struggle against like Charlotte, Washington, Chicago. They've lost to them twice. I know Chicago's not bottom, but you know what I mean? They're just not good teams. And so for the Pacers to kind of take advantage of some of the weaknesses of Brooklyn, what is an area that they can attack in this game?
Well, going back to Cam and McHale, easily, and I wonder if you'll see this, we've seen this more, is that if teams have sort of figured out that after these two, they really have very few scoring options. And McHale's even has become sort of a non-scoring option too. He's got like fewer than 20 points in, I think, like 10 of his last 13 games or something. He's really, really struggled. But with Cam specifically, we've seen more teams blitz him and just try to jam his action early on in the shot clock and sort of like force him out of a shot and make him read and react into sort of out of those double teams. He's a little smaller, so it's a little harder for him to see. I could see that being kind of a problem against kind of like good point of attack guards, like, you know, Nembhard, and they just have big, you guys, you know, Pacers just have big guys sort of all around. So like coming on a blitzing screening action will actually probably be somewhat problematic for him. So I think you could see that. That's what I would do basically every time if I was them, because they don't really have many other outs. I mean, Dennis Schroeder and you can run some stuff, and they, you know, they have some other guys who can score, but for the main thing, that's what we've seen an increase of sort of since Cam's been back, since teams have figured it out, that McHale sometimes gets it, not really, like most times he can't really beat his primary defender. But if you can kind of like work Cam out of his progression early, you see problems with the Nets offense for sure.
I want to talk about Mikal Bridges here for a second, because this is a very polarizing name. There's been a ton of draft picks rumored to have been thrown for Mikal Bridges. Like, you're talking like four or five draft picks for Mikal Bridges in a trade. And the Nets were like, no, we're not trading him. When you look at a team that's trying to rebuild, to me, from an outside perspective, I don't feel like Mikal Bridges is a number one that I would want to build around. But I do think he could be a solid, probably more so close to three, maybe borderline two. But I still feel like he's, you know, a number three on a really high level team. So when you hold on to him so tight, is that just because they don't have a lot of assets around him? Or is it really, do the Nets believe he can take that next step and become a number one guy?
So I think it's a combination of factors that have worked in like Bridges here. So I think one, it's coming out of the, and I'll try to like be really concise about them, because this is like a really, really long explanation. But the bullet points are coming out of the KD and Kyrie era, then and Harden, the Nets, I think, were desperate for sort of like a steady hand, easy guy to root for, good locker room guy. Right. Like that you could sort of build around and like, you know, had a good vibe through the rest of the league. And I think that they went through so much tumult during those years that having this other guy who was like not like these other guys was nice. And I think they probably overvalued him to some degree because of that. So I think that's one. Two is coming out of that era, having something tangible to show for it he's still an excellent contract. He struggled here because he's probably miscast, but like it's, the contract's still amazing, right? He makes no money for what he is. And so I think, like, you know, you want to probably try to keep that asset around as long as possible. And idea being that, like, once they could clear other money off the books, his contract was still so favorable and he had good cachet through the rest of the league that they would be able to attract a superstar to be sort of like a one to his maybe one A or two or wherever he would end up falling. So I think there's like a lot of different reasons for it. I think the Nets have like probably miscalculated a lot along this timeline about like how good he was, how much people might want to come play here, how good the team is. I think they've made tons of miscalculations and we're seeing it now, because we caught a ton of heat. My podcast partner and I, Adam, where we were like adamant that the Nets had to trade. If there was a deal for Mikal Bridges from the Rockets where they could get their picks back, we were adamant that you had to take it, had to reset it, control the picks, tank, started over. Nets didn't do it. And I actually think now that the trade deadline has passed and Nets fans are starting to see that it's really maybe not good at all, I think the tenor on that has come back around because it just doesn't look very good. So anyway, that's a long and winding answer to say, I think they've miscalculated a couple of different things, but although there are some parts of it where I get why.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely an interesting player, no doubt about it. And I think there'd be, you know, 29 other teams that would love to have him on their roster.
Of course.
So he's clearly a starter in this league, a very capable player. I mean, you could say he's borderline all-star at his peak, right? But I agree with you. I think if that trade was there with the Rockets, they should have taken it, because to me, this is a Nets team that they're trying to figure out what direction they're heading. And they decided to fire their coach, you know, Jacques Vaughn, and then now they have interim head coach Kevin Ollie. I'm kind of curious, what has Kevin Ollie done differently than Jacques Vaughn? And I see here over the last 10 games, they have been playing better, eighth in net rating right now. So I'm just kind of curious, maybe is that what Kevin Ollie's brought to the table, or is it just strength of schedule, that kind of thing? I don't know.
I mean, they had a super easy schedule, of which they won. So that part of it is they went like Cleveland without Mitchell, Charlotte, Detroit, Philly, no Embiid, Memphis, who they somehow lost to, who had nobody, right? Atlanta, they take two back-to-back against Atlanta, no Trey, Memphis again. So part of this is schedule. And if I've read those teams again, I mean, they have a losing record in that stretch, right? So
yeah,
where, and some of it is born out of like a 19 point win against Cleveland and a 30 point win against Atlanta. Cause like the rest of it has been on a night to night basis, pretty bad in terms of what he's done. That's made changes. They've run some more sets that are trying to work, like specifically Cam when he's been in the lineup, into different actions. They're still trying to get like dribble penetration off of Schroeder, like pick and roll, so they can start like a kick out swing action. Like that was mostly there with Vaughn too. There's a little more cohesiveness. I will say Dennis Schroeder has helped sort of stabilize parts of the offense in ways that Spencer Dinwiddie couldn't, and even like Ben Simmons when he couldn't. Just was basically just like run pick and roll and be able to beat bigs like sort of downhill at times. He's not amazing at it, but he's definitely better than what they had before. So there are a couple other roster pieces that kind of help him here. But I really do. I mean, a lot of that is just, I mean, I just read the teams they played. They played the worst teams and they have a losing record.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if there's been any wholesale schematic changes other than Cam Thomas basically has a green light. And I think that's mostly fine. And they've just been able to play teams with sort of like commiserate talent to them, sometimes worse. And then they've still found ways to lose some of those games.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think you'll see Andrew Nimhard start on Cam Thomas.
And yeah, that's going to be a problem for him, by the way. Like, because if you, I mean, I don't know how many, oh, you're a Pacers podcast. For some reason, I was doing this the opposite, where you were like on my podcast. like anyone that's watched Nimhard, like, you know, work with Shea, like, you know, he gets those assignments, right? And he's really a problematic guy for those. It makes me wonder even if they have to totally double him all the time, because he's just such a good defender. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're good. I mean, there's been a lot of Pacer fans that I feel like they have a love-hate relationship with Nimhard, because offensively, like, he can kind of get careless with the basketball sometimes, and he can actually take some questionable shots in terms of, like, the flow of the game. But most of the time, he's not one that's chucking shots or doing much of anything. He's really just focused on defense and kind of being a secondary playmaker for Tyrese Halliburton. But I think he's going to draw that assignment of Cam Thomas, a very capable scorer, and I think you'll see Aaron Nesmith draw the assignment of Mikal Bridges, which I think those are going to be some pretty interesting, you know, matchups right there. But one player that you just brought up, Ben Simmons, it's been just a train wreck for him really since he got traded from Philadelphia, even the last season after the Atlanta Hawks playoff series. Like, it's just been a train wreck for him. He's done for the year. Are there any other injuries that should be of note for this game?
No, Simmons is done. Just had a second surgery on his back. I just actually, just before I jumped on here, I just did a pretty long podcast about like sort of the future around him, which looks pretty grim, I would say, just in terms of just long-term future. I would say it's probably non-zero that he's, I don't think it's like high that he never plays again, but it's more than zero. And you wouldn't say that about most guys who are hurt, right? Like most guys, you would say, yeah, he's probably going to come back in some form. I'm a little concerned that he doesn't. In terms of other injuries, nothing major for the Nets. And that's actually another sort of like funny part of their season, is that while they have had a bad season, they haven't been like significantly less healthy than a lot of other teams. Once you back out the Simmons thing, even with that, it was hard to project him playing tons and tons of games because of his because of his previous stuff. So now they're relatively healthy now. Cam Johnson's back in the lineup. He's been ramping his minutes back up. They are kind of who they are, which is the other reason. It's like sometimes with teams that are struggling, you know, you look at Memphis, it's like, hey, what do you want them to do? Every single guy's hurt, right? Like, they're going to think, of course they're going to stink. The Nets really can't make that claim. Bridges has literally played every single game this year. And I think that's probably a problem with him. I think he's got so many miles on the tires here that it's fatigue is probably starting to catch up with him. But no, I could have probably just said no other injuries, but like that's sort of the state of the Nets injury piece, is that they are relatively healthy here.
No, that's good to know that Cam Johnson's coming back from the injury, and Mikal Bridges, 35 minutes a game for 66 games. I mean, Is Tom Thibodeau coaching the Knicks? I'm just kidding, obviously.
It's nuts. It's crazy, man. And by the way, he's played like the third most minutes in the NBA over the last 5 years, behind only Tatum. Like if you and that's even not counting FIBA and stuff. Like he's just played too many minutes. I don't know why they're doing this. Sort of seems it's just so problematic. Anyway, he's played too much.
Yeah, now this is more like an off-season question, but I'm just kind of curious since I have you here. I thought I'd get your opinion on it. Nick Claxton, this is a guy that it felt like he probably won't sign a new deal with Brooklyn based on what report was out there, but I feel like he's been a solid center. Not saying he's great or anything like that, but not a bad center. Probably middle of the pack, maybe below middle, but still, whenever I've seen him play, like I like his energy. I like the way that he does play, but what is kind of his situation there in Brooklyn?
Yeah, so this is probably the biggest question they have going into this offseason. He is an amazing switch defender. He's a great sort of weak side shot blocker, even like straight up shot blocker. He's not amazing like one-on-one defensively against starting other like big centers, but like that's probably not the biggest problem in the world just because like there's very, I don't know, some of those guys you can't stop anyway, so whatever. But 24 years old, he strikes me as, well, one, I get sometimes worried of like, you know, do these guys even want to re-sign with the Nets? Like, I think that's a story that we've talked about recently, is that everyone thinks that your house looks great. And then, I don't know, someone else comes in and makes an offer and you're like, hey, you know, all of a sudden it doesn't look so good. I do wonder how much these guys even want to stay around Brooklyn at this point. Regardless, he strikes me as just like the wrong player for the Nets to spend a lot of money on at this time in their sort of like reset rebuild. I think he's a nice player. I advocated like trying to trade him to OKC earlier in the year, cause I was like, hey, he'd be perfect for them. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Like he'd give him some size, switch everything, him and he could play next to Chet. Like that would be awesome. I think but I don't know if there's going to be a huge market for him just cause he's sort of like one dimensional on offense. I don't know. The worst problem you can have in the NBA is signing these guys to just a few million more than you should at the time, because you kind of know who they are and they're already in the building. My gut is that is the case here. And it's really not a knock on him. He deserves to get paid. He's a good center. He does some things awesomely. But where the Nets are now, they're just so far away that I just don't know why you would want to go like sort of long-term with a guy who's still kind of one-dimensional.
Yeah, I kind of feel like maybe the Mavericks could have traded for him instead of Daniel Gafford.
Right. And yeah, like someone like that, like run pick and roll, shot block, switch everything, like switch on to stuff. I mean, he can play some drop. It's like, but it's, you know, the Nets, it's hard for these guys because, you know, let me put it this way. If they still had Harden, I'd say resign him. Mm-hmm. Right, like if you still have James Harden and he's setting screen and getting downhill, sort of like lob threat, screening, you know, sort of just kind of just like sprinting off the roll, like then I would say go for it. But they really don't have anyone that can really maximize his powers at all, and that's also a problem with these guys. Like you need a big center, you just need kind of someone that can feed them, and they Nets don't have that. So yeah, if Harden was still here, go for it. Yeah, if it was like Shea, if it was Luka, if it was like these guys that can make really pay to have these other centers that are just big and athletic, but the Nets like don't have that guy that can kind of unlock that either.
Is there a number that he's been rumored to be looking for in terms of
I think it was like 18. It was a lot. Okay. It was not crazy, but it was enough that you're thinking, you know, they're already pot stuck on the Simmons 40 million, and you know they can't play together. Even if Simmons came back, they can't like even play together anyway. Yeah. And I just, they have this one chance to have a really clean cap sheet, 25 and 26, where there are some guys that might spring loose here and they can either be traded for or maybe even signed because the salary cap's going to go up and they might want to test free agency. And I think at any dollar they cannot have on the books at that point would be worth it to not have on. Mm-hmm. Right. So, because everyone does, like McHale's still on a great contract. They got Cam Johnson there. Thomas will probably be up for some kind of extension at that point. And that's kind of it. Like they don't have any other money committed. And if you got into like the $16, $17, $18 million range, you better just make sure the next guy is like a really good point guard or something, because otherwise it's just going to be hard to unlock it.
I think it's going to be a fascinating offseason for Brooklyn. Obviously we're not there yet, but I do think it's going to be fascinating because they do have a lot of pieces that could be moved. And they could try to reshape their roster with some big moves too. So I think it's going to be interesting. But for this game, we don't really do predictions on this show, but I think it will be a must win for the Pacers because they're about to go on a road trip after they play Brooklyn and Cleveland Saturday, Monday, 5-game road trip. And so, you know, they're trying to avoid the play-in and get into a top six seed. So I think it's going to be a very important game for the Pacers, especially after dropping one in overtime to DeMar DeRozan and the Chicago Bulls Wednesday night, which was just a thriller of a game.
Yeah.
But a lot of poor late game execution for the Pacers.
I at this point, I hate to say it, but the Nets, you if you want to make the playoffs, you got to beat the Nets. That's just kind of where the Nets are. They're a little bit of dead team walking here. Unfortunately, it sucks. I wish it was different, but having watched every single minute from these guys this year, you can kind of see the writing on the wall a little bit. Now, look, they can get hot. They can shoot threes. You can't totally roll over here, but
right.
But where the Pacers are and where the Nets are and sort of trajectories, yeah, you got to, it's the Pacers got to win here.
I will just say this. The Pacers have lost to Portland twice. They've lost to Charlotte twice. They've lost to Toronto twice. And they've lost to Washington once. I'm trying to think who else is in the bottom of the East and the West. But they've lost to almost every bad team besides Detroit so far this year. So Pacer fans are like, oh, God, they're going to not play to their level of their competition. And they're going to end up getting beat by a team that's not better than them on paper. But I think that they have to kind of be focused and win this game. They did lose to Memphis as well, too. So it's just, well,
I was just going to say, don't forget that I was just going to triple check who started for Memphis here because I had four of them and I just want to make sure I got them all right. They lost to the Nets. If you want to feel better, the Nets lost to a Memphis team that started Luke Kennard, John Conchar, Santi Aldama, Vince Williams, and Trey Jameson. So, and those were their best five.
Yeah.
that's you're just trying to make yourself feel a little better.
I will be in the building for the game, so I'm hoping to see a better performance from Indiana than what the Nets showed against the Grizzlies. But as we wrap things up here, I always like to have a little fun on the show. I was going to have you do this, but I was like, you know, we're not making a super long segment. So I decided to avoid doing a draft of, you know, former players that played for Indiana and Brooklyn/New Jersey in their career. I thought it'd be fun to do that. But instead of doing that, Easter's around the corner. And we just did on one of our previous podcasts, you know, an Easter draft or Easter candy draft, excuse me. So I'm just curious, what are your top three Easter candies that you go for?
All right. This is hard because I'm in a place where I really am trying not to eat any candy, but
I'm tempting you.
after years of eating too much candy, I'll go Reese's, anything Reese's related. Are we drafting like snake?
We're not drafting. I'm just going to let you give me your top three. I already did a draft. All right, so
I'll give two and then I'll dumpster one. So it's definitely anything Reese's related. I'll just go straight old school jelly bean. Never can get wrong with jelly bean. And just punt Peeps into the sun and have him never come back. That's where. I'll draft three and then I'll kill the third one.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you doing that. I'm not a Peeps guy. I do like Cadbury eggs. I don't know if you're a fan of those or not, but
nah, can't do it. Can't do it. It's kind of gross to me.
Too much cream in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just like it starts off great and then it goes all wrong.
I can understand that. I feel like it's kind of a hit or miss candy. I do like the Robin Egg Whoppers. That's one of my favorites.
Those are good. The Whoppers are good because I actually had a conversation with my kid the other day. We were trying to identify what even that flavor was because I feel it's so unique, the Whopper.
Yeah, it's malt.
Is that what it is? Malt?
Yeah, so, it's malt.
I don't know. I didn't teach my kid anything. I just said, I don't know. No one knows.
Well, that maybe will help a little bit. It's more like a malt chocolate taste. But yeah, I mean, Reese's is obviously the way to go. Starburst jelly beans are my goat jelly bean. I just think they're really good. But anyway, yeah, Easter's around the corner, people, so make sure you get your baskets full of good candy. But Doug, go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you at on social media as we wrap this one up.
Yeah, Doug Norrie, just my name. Pretty unique. So Doug Norrie on Twitter. And if you ever want to get into the Nets, go listen to Locked On Nets and see how we're making our way through the season.
They will have a recap, I'm sure, of this Pacers-Nets game. So if you want to hear Doug's thoughts on how the Pacers played, make sure you guys check that out. But other than that, we will be back for another episode on Sunday night. So Pacer fans, thanks so much for tuning in. We will talk to you all then.